In a similar vein, when we go about developing a contact field with spiritual beings, we should always act out of love, never out of fear, anger or other negative emotions. Our loving feelings will draw loving spirit beings to us, bringing us profound happiness. Our base or vile feelings will invariably draw base and vile beings to us who can literally ruin our lives. With patience, persistence and a good attitude, we eventually will begin getting messages from spirits of loved ones. Advancing from EVP to ITC work. It would be nice to be able to study the ITC successes occurring today in various countries, configure similar systems in our homes and start getting the same astonishing results. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. Building and strengthening a healthy contact field over a period of time seems to attract capable help from the higher levels of spirit, and without that help it is apparently impossible at this time for us on Earth to make the advanced ITC connection. With continued dedication and enthusiasm we may eventually make contact with a higher being who will direct us toward advanced ITC work. If this occurs, we can expect to move ahead quite rapidly. So as we pray for help, especially advice for improving our communications, our prayers are answered. The higher spiritual beings are angels, beings of light, ascended masters, etc. They are eager to see Earth become more like the heavens. This is told to us by all the time proven religions, and it is being told to modern ITC researchers as well, by their spirit side collaborators. When we begin contacting the other side, ear, make no mistake about it, they have their eye on us, and if our efforts are earnest and our motives are based on love, we will probably get assistance. Tips for beginners. At first it is best to ask only two or three questions, as it takes about an hour of listening for each 5 minutes of recording. It is best to try to contact deceased loved ones and friends at first, because with your love you already have established a contact field with these people, and also because you know intimate details of their lives and can therefore assess the validity of the contact and the messages. Ask questions that solicit longer answers, rather than, how are you? Keep in mind that spirit beings can read our thoughts and feelings, and that their voices are not usually audible while they are being placed on tape. Also keep in mind that people with strong telepathic skills, whether innate or developed, can generate strong contact fields. If you or someone in your experimenting group has these skills, your chances for early success are better. If your telepathic skills are not strong, you will still get results but it may take longer. Negative feelings of fear, anger or resentment can draw troubled spiritual beings to you and your group indiscriminately, and the messages you will receive could be unnerving, or even worse, your lives could be badly disrupted. Better to experiment when you are happy and at peace, and to ensure that everyone in your group is a happy, loving person. If someone in the group has had a bad day, raise their spirits. Always foster harmony and unity in the group. The safest and most successful experimenters are fully aware that everyone has a spirit protector, or guardian angel, and they always pray to that higher being for assistance before each session. In fact, it is wise for each of us to nurture daily our relationship with our own personal angel. The best contacts are usually made in the wee hours of the morning, as say 2 to 4 a.m. since it is neither fun nor normal for most of us to be up at that time. The next best time to make contact is late evening, before bed. Apparently it takes considerable effort and energy for our spirit side colleagues to give us EVP messages, so quite often the only message received is the name of the experimenter or the name of the being. EVP voices rush by quickly and have an unusual timbre. They are often grammatically incorrect. The last syllable of a word may rise, giving the voice a sing-song quality. Sometimes the last syllables are dropped altogether as though energy has run out, making the message sound staccato. The other side seems to want researchers whose curiosity drives them to experiment. They shy away from individuals who want to be successful at any cost in order to dazzle large audiences. Higher beings are also pulled to help people praying with passion for help, or longing for a loved one. They are drawn strongly to help spirit children. Experiment in small steps. Don't fear criticism. Don't let others stand in your way of seeking the truth you desire. Contribute to society. Become a spiritual philosopher. Finally, the seriousness of communicating with the worlds of spirit cannot be overemphasized. Weekend hobbyists and dabblers are likely to get themselves into trouble. Also, the problems they create become fuel for those who fight against all interdimensional communication, usually out of fear and religious dogma. The latest spirit contacts in Luxembourg. A message for Juliet, a dog named Terry, and Jules Verne. Back in the 1950s, Juliet Hollister of Connecticut dreamed of a better world. She began a project that, unknown to her at that time, would last a lifetime, taking her around the globe to meet spiritual leaders and religious dignitaries of many faiths. With the help of Eleanor Roosevelt, Juliet founded the Temple of Understanding, which today is a United Nations NGO, non-governmental organization, that is sometimes called the Spiritual UN. Its role is to help increase understanding and compatibility among the world's religions. Eleanor Roosevelt, of course, played a key role in getting the United Nations on its feet with the intent that this new international body would provide the best leadership the world ever had. Considering the struggling, warring, fragmented state of the world before the formation of the UN, the UN has done much to fulfill Mrs. Roosevelt's dreams, although much is still left to be done. After I, Mark Macy, got to know Juliet Hollister in 1993, it occurred to me that if she met Maggie and Jules Hirschfispark in Luxembourg, only good things would come of it. Juliet, too, had a strong desire to meet the Hirschfisparks. In January of 1994, I sent a letter to suggest the meeting. Within a week of receiving my letter, Maggie received a fax from her spirit friend and mentor Swegen Salter at Time Stream. You know that Pescator has many personalities, or aspects. The man called on Earth Jesus Christ is only one personality among others who belong to the entity Pescator. In fact, one of these personalities is someone you would call an intercessor for the older woman Mark reported about. The union between them is due to the fact that Mrs. Hollister is working for the Temple of Understanding. You know that Eleanor Roosevelt, who helped her to create it, is trying together with Bill O'Neill to build a contact bridge from our world to yours. But Mark is well informed. I don't have to tell you more. For the evolution of ITC, it would be important to meet the lady one day, perhaps during summer in Luxembourg. Juliet Hollister and her niece Alison Van Dyck, both of whom have done much to help ITC in the US, received an invitation to visit Settle, and they invited me, Mark, along to introduce them to Jules and Maggie. Maggie and Jules picked us up at the hotel at 11 a.m. and we went to their home, observing historic sites and points of interest in the charming city of Luxembourg along the way. We sat around the dining room table, drank sparkling water and got to know each other much better. According to Maggie, that casual conversation played a crucial part in establishing the needed energy or bridge for a contact with Time Stream that day. It helped bring our vibrations into harmony. As we sat around the table talking about ITC and ourselves, Maggie eventually rose and walked over to the GA2 configuration, which the couple had set up in their living area in front of the TV. It included a portable stereo radio with two detachable speakers, a small battery-operated radio with a dish antenna, two extra speakers with built-in power supplies, and a tape deck with a microphone to record the contact. The two radios were tuned to different frequencies between stations so that there was a low hissing of white noise. It wasn't long before a high-pitched voice could be heard very weakly, "Contact." It was the voice of technician. Maggie immediately replied, "Hello. Hello." She adjusted the dials for a moment, then stepped aside as we all listened intently. In about 15 seconds, the white noise of the radios began to fade away and the deep, familiar voice of Constantin Rodive became louder and louder. Following is an edited transcript of the English part of the contact, minus some highly personal information for Juliet Hollister. 1994 July 30th, 12th:34, Technician, Contact. K. Raw Dive, it can only work when the vibrations of those present are in complete harmony and when their aims and intentions are pure. Juliet Hollister, you have many friends not only on your side but also on this side of the veil. Now that you have come to the autumn of your life and when you can look back on the situations you lived and all the work you did, some of your actions seem to you far away and nearly vanished in the dawn. But others subsist splendidly and in full light. You still will be given many years to complete and round up the project you undertook. And it is only then that you will come home, returning to those who were with you once and who are dear to your heart. Dear Alison Van Dyck, we know that life has not been easy for you on many occasions, but be reassured that your passing here at this contact bridge will mark a turning point in your existence. Especially the children on Earth owe you very much. The children are the future of the world. You, Alison, are one of the builders of this new, better world. Finally, last but not least, Mark Macy. My dear friend, we bring our greetings to colleague Meek and the Uffoffs. Also to Hans Heckman, who has done a beautiful job to spread ITC information. You know by experience, Mark, how dangerous drugs of all kinds can be. Try to warn humanity that they not only alter their present lives on your side, but also influence in a harmful way their future lives. Go on with your ITC experiments and you will see that the bridge to the States will soon be strengthened. Regina, as your twin soul, can help you. Listen to her inner voice and you will be guided in the right way. Technician, end of contact. After the contact, we return to the table to play the tape back, phrase by phrase, to decipher what Constantin had said. Most paranormal messages over radio are not as clear as those coming through the telephone receiver. After we had transcribed the contact, Jules made a copy of a recent phone dialogue with American ragtime composer Scott Joplin to present to his American guests. Scott Joplin, Jeanette Meek, and her dog Terry. This recent contact occurred when a friend, Hilda Shikarat, visited Maggie. Hilda's husband, Otto, had just died. Unknown to the two ladies, Scott Joplin was with Otto in the spirit world. Otto had a message for his wife and Scott was going to convey it over the phone. As is often the case, it was a short, simple message, ere an obscure little fact that only the Shikarat couple knew anything about. Unfortunately, in this case, Hilda didn't recall the incident. Add to that the fact that she and Maggie speak limited English and so they had a hard time understanding Scott's Black American dialect, plus Scott's growing frustration in trying to get a rather silly little message across. In the actual taped dialogue, which was more a comedy of errors, so were all the problems of communicating between dimensions. Listening, we felt Scott's frustrations. After all, he'd been away from the Earth for 75 years, and all the problems of the spoken word obviously irritated him. This was the first time Scott had spoken over the phone from the spirit world, and it took him a few times before he could even say hello. Maggie, hello. Scott, hello. Maggie, hello. Scott, hello. Maggie, hello. Scott, the words run together. Hello, I'm Scott Joplin. Maggie, she asks him in German to identify himself. Scott, Scott Joplin. Joplin, Scotter, can you hear me? Maggie, Chaplin, yes, I can hear you. Scott, okay, I got here with me. Maggie, suddenly remembering an earlier contact in which Scott Joplin was mentioned as a friend of Jeanette Meek. Ah, Mr. Joplin. Scott, yeah? I got here with me and Otto Shikarat. He says something about Saint Joe Anemarkt or something like that. Saint Joe Anemarkt in Saarbrücken. Saint Joe Anemarkt in Saarbrücken, and a boar's on his head. You got me? Maggie, no, I haven't got you. What do you call her? Scott, Herr Shikarat, a Shikarat. Maggie, Shikarat, yes. Maggie turns the phone over to Hilda, still not realizing that Otto Shikarat was with Scott Joplin. Scott, the name, Hilda, I'm here. I hear you. Scott, yeah, okay. He tells me something about Saint Joanna Markt, or something like that. Hilda, Saint Johann. Scott, Joanna Markt of Saarbrücken. Hilda, nodding, you can find in Saarbrücken, Saint Joanna Markt. Scott, yeah, okay, he tells me about a boars, but I don't know what it is. Boars, a boars is a bump on the head in a dialect of southern Germany. Hilda, Bowser? It's a name. Bowser? Scott, not Bowser. He spells it B-A-U-S-C. Boars. Hilda, ah, boars. Scott, like a boil on his head. That's a boil on his head. Buhl is a more general German term for a bump, pronounced boiler, and there's indication that Scott has it confused with a boil, an infected, swollen area of the body. Hilda, mum. Scott, got me? Hilda, I don't know. Scott, sighs in obvious frustration. Hilda, what means it? Hello. Scott, hello. Hilda, what's your name? Scott, a bit flabbergasted now, Joplina Scott Joplin. Hilda, Chapel? Then in the background, Maggie tells her it's Scott Joplin. Ah, Joplin. Eh, do I know you? Scott, no, you don't yet EMT know me. Hilda, oh? Never? Scott, I don't think so, lady. Hilda and Maggie talk a moment in German, and Maggie mentions that Scott and Hilda are both friends of Jeanette Meek. Hilda, ah, Jeanette Meek is your friend? Scott, yes, yes, my pal friend. Yeah? Hilda, ah, my husband is Otto Schickeret. Do you know him? Scott, yes, certainly. Hilda, mutters something in German. Scott, that guy's standing here. Hilda, with deep emotion, ah, Otto is here? Oh, greetings. A lot of greetings. Scott, a boars. He's saying it's called a boil. Hilda, Maggie is hearing now, yes? Maggie, hello, here is Maggie again. Scott, in distress now. Ah, Seether, it's all rather stupid, I think. A boars. A Buhl, he said. A Buhl on the head. Maggie, a Buhl on the head? Scott, yeah, a Buhl. Maggie, a Buhl on the head, what do you mean by that? Scott, your grandfather says, a nup. A nup or nubble is a knock on the head, or a very hard lump. Evidently, Maggie's deceased grandfather has gotten into the conversation, as well. Maggie, a nup. Nup. Yes. And what is our broken bar? Scott is getting frustrated with the whole thing, which means that the contact will end soon unless things can be resolved. Maggie, in soothing voice, it's okay, there's somebody here who can understand. Scott, okay, fine. Maggie, trying to sound cheerful, okay, fine. Thank you, Mr. Joplin. It's very nice. Scott, regaining his composure, it's nice to talk to you. Maggie, yes, it's nice to talk to you. Mr. Joplin, can you tell me anything about Jeanette Meek? A dog apparently comes close to Scott now. Its yapping is audible. Scott, a terrier here. Here's the dog. That's the dog. Maggie, hello. I hear the dog. What dog is it? Scott, Terry. More than one clairvoyant colleague has reported seeing a small, squarish, Scotty-like dog moving around at the feet of Jeanette Meek since her transition to spirit. Jeanette has told mediums that the dog's name is Terry. Maggie, Terry? Scott, he's together with Cucky. The deceased dog Cucky had belonged to Hilda, who now hears the dog and gets back on the phone. Hilda, ah, hello. Is this Bertu or is this Cucky? Scott, exasperated, I already told Maggie it's Cucky. I told her. Do you folks communicate? It was unfortunate that Scott Joplin, having been away from Earth for 75 years, was chosen to relay such a dubious message. However, it's apparent that returning to the problems posed by spoken communication can be a very difficult and frustrating experience for someone in the higher planes. Jeanette Meek and Scott Joplin seem to have similar home frequencies in either the very high astral planes or the mental causal planes. They, like Dr. Constantin Rawdive, must commute down to the mid-astral planes to participate in ITC. As far as communicating information across dimensions, this wasn't a particularly useful contact. Still, the failed attempt to get a simple message across reveals a lot to us about life on the other side. For one thing, our pets can accompany us. Also, it's evident that we carry our tempers and frustration levels along with us. Life in heaven isn't all clouds and roses. Furthermore, contacts such as this one are not just between two people. Just as Scott is together with Otto Shikarit and Maggie's grandfather, and probably a few others as well, other contacts have indicated the presence of friends accompanying the spirit communicator. The main mode of communication in the spirit worlds is telepathy, in which concepts and images are shared rather clearly. When our friends get involved in ITC and have to revert to words and phrases with all their inherent difficulties and potential misunderstandings, they obviously have troubles. Our letter from Jules Verne. Also, during our trip to Luxembourg, the harsh Fisbarks gave us a picture of Jules Verne which they'd received via computer recently from their spirit colleagues along with a letter from the famous French science fiction writer. They'd received these items shortly before leaving for a Parisian ITC congress and were asked by their spirit colleagues to present them to the French people. Translated from French to English by Gretua Vedizian, it is not without emotion that I am writing these few lines, destined, from what I have just been told, to be presented at the time of a conference in my homeland of France as well as in Paris where I was, if my memories serve me right, for the final time in the winter of 1896-97, nearly 100 years ago, according to your calculation of time. Permit me first to present myself. My name is Jules Verne, and I suppose it is not unknown to you, since it already had a certain golden glow at the time I was living. Indeed, and as strange as this might seem to you, I am good and dead, and yet as alive as you are, if not more so. I here state, deaf in the left ear, practically blind and cardiac, in possession of a deficient stomach and suffering from rheumatism, with acute gout and diabetes, I was startled to find myself, at the expiration of my earthly life on the 24th of March, 1905, transported from my domicile at 6 Boulevard Longueville, as it were, without warning and without my being exactly able to describe the circumstances, towards a place that was totally strange to me. I suddenly realized with amazement that I no longer had pain anywhere, and that my blindness had completely disappeared, which allowed me to observe, among other things, that I was in a sumptuous palace bringing to mind the splendid residences of the Rajas, with walls constructed not in sandstone but in resplendent white marble. The opulence of the many mirrors reflected the blaze of the solid silver furniture. The mural paintings showed courtiers and girls who were dancing, and I noticed a pleasant freshness emanating from a number of little fountains surrounding luxuriant green plants. My hearing, now completely restored, finally permitted me once more to savor the melodious warble of the countless birds. I then heard music so soft and sweet that I cried with joy. Slender, fine and exquisite creatures, reminding me of my Honorine when she still possessed all the beauty and freshness of her youth, and who, molded in their orange and blue silk cloths which contrasted with their tanned skin, invited me to sit upon the soft pillows and inquired as to my desires and wishes. They spoke to me in a language that up until then I had never heard, but strangely, I understood immediately and I was even able to answer them in the same idiom. It was only later that I was informed that it was the language of the river that each one acquires as soon as one arrives here. For a long time I thought I was dreaming, and it was only after weeks and months which somehow seemed to me to pass like the flight of swallows that I finally understood that I was deceased. Naturally, I searched for friends and acquaintances who were with me during my earthly life. Not one of the Hetzels, nor my dear parents Sophie and Pierre were, unfortunately, known in the palace nor in the agglomerations situated in the clearings of the majestic forests that surrounded my new domicile. I never saw a gardener touch or trim these trees or shrubs, which gracefully seemed to adjust their spacing themselves. It even seems to me that they themselves destroyed the weeds surrounding them by the generations of some enzyme that dissolved the matter and produced some sort of compost. But I am getting lost in details, a character trait I have in common with Dickens and Balzac, my favorite authors. Alas! All beauty, even that which I discovered in Quaporea, for that is what my new home was named, ends in numbing the soul, and perfection is often the symbol of stagnation. It is only recently that I have gotten wind of the existence of the group Time Stream, and still only due to chance. One of the many passing travellers at Quapaw and with whom I was conversing on a gentle night of the full moon on terrace decked with jealous, a certain Arthur Moose, a handsome man with thoughtful face, confided to me his tongue no doubt loosened by the dry wine accompanying the slices of marrow of a fish with pale pink flesh, or confided that he had quit the group of researchers in transcommunication. The word was new to me, because he was embarrassed by some sort of blunder made by his wife, still on Earth. He now wandered and searched through the valley of the river, poor wretch, in search of a new hearth. This Arthur reports that my nephew Gaston, son of my dear brother Paul, joined this group in contact with Luxembourg. The poor boy had spent a few years in a nursing home there, where he had died in the course of one of the great wars that, I am told, had ravaged Europe after 1910. Three companions who were with me at the table in the palace had likewise heard of him, two Englishmen who both had died in London, and one Nathaniel Wapping having perished at the time of the Great Fire of 1666, and the other James Smurl, dying of a hemorrhage during the bombardments of the World War. The third was an Indian who claimed to be the former Raja of Bikaner, but it would be difficult for me to say if it is true or not. In any case, if he is not of princely descent, he possesses the manners and the style. A fascinating air voyage brought all four of us here. This time the experiment with the giant balloon succeeded, to be beside the beautiful Swegen and her colleagues of Time Stream. So here I am, my French friends and others of Causey, ready to attempt the experiment to establish a bridge between our world and you, the French researchers. Be assured, I am in good company, among throngs of others. Michel Kiesekenin, the grandfather of French experimenter Monique Simonet, as well as the ex-marshal Sebastiano Porter, already involved in this work before my arrival, are all of valuable help to me. Note to Father Francois Brun, I am going to buckle up like a Breton. My first message has become long and I know it, but it is advice I share with another new friend here, Conrad Lawrence. He, too, never knows when to quit. Jules Verne. The communication from Jules Verne is not only entertaining, but instructive as well, in many ways. He is obviously living in a palace he has mentally created. For some reason, he is separated from his parents and his beloved Honorine. Are there karmic circumstances for this separation? Did Honorine no longer wish to be with him? Have his parents already incarnated or moved up to another dimension? Or, are they in a lower dimension? Most significant about the late author's communication is that although the palace is very beautiful, he's dissatisfied with it and describes it as a stasis or numbing of the soul. It is this dissatisfaction with a perfect situation that encourages a person to reincarnate to experience new situations. Already, Jules Verne, an adventurous man, is seeking new friends and new experiences at Time Stream. Who knows what will come of this fortunate collaboration? At any rate, I, Mark Macy, had a fine time in Luxembourg in the summer of 94. A Juliet Hollister, Alison Van Dyck, and I renewed friendships across the Atlantic and made new ones across the Vale. Being inclined toward music and writing from a young age, I was especially touched by the closeness I suddenly felt toward Scott Joplin and Jules Verne. I returned to the States more convinced than ever that ITC is among the most vital fields of research underway today, bridging the physical to the spiritual and shedding light on a healthy future for a troubled planet. Photo section. Plate 1A. Ernst Mux. Ernst and Margaret Mux were very close friends with the Luxembourg experimenters, Maggie and Jules Harsh, and were determined that their friendship would last beyond the grave. Margaret died in April 1987 and, true to her intent, stayed in contact with her husband and their friends by sending messages occasionally through the ITC equipment at Settle. Ernst died on November 26, 1992, got settled into his new home, and within months delivered two long letters and this picture through the computer of Maggie and Jules.